Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, Michael Anthony here. Van Halen, Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle. But anyway, you're listening to the only podcast that is dedicated to breaking down the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And the podcast will rock. Ow!
Hello, baby!
What is up? Good evening, all of you rockers, rockettes, and everything in between. You have joined us for a new live edition of And the Podcast Will Rock. And you know what that means? That means it's time to rank an album that we have completed on our journey. And this time, tonight, we discuss the, I don't know if it's infamous or if it's just famous, but it's an album by the mighty Van Halen called OU812 of the Sammy Hagar era. And now that I've said that, we're going to lose half the audience. And that's okay. It's fine. We'll press on forward. I am your co-host, Mark Kammeyer, with me, as always, Corey Morissette. Corey, it is a stacked lineup for the evening, wouldn't you say?
Boy, is it ever. Look at this great group of guests we have going on here. We have the Chazitar making his debut here tonight. He's going on the road here in 2026, a full year before the Kiss Avatars are going on the road. So you can go see the Chazitar. He'll be doing Regarding Roger Waters live all across North America. So go check that. Or don't, you'd be better off. Or regarding Lulu for that fucking matter. But we've got a murderer's row here. It's Eddie Van Halen's birthday. We're not going to talk about David Lee Roth and all the bullshit he's been talking this week. We're here to be positive tonight. We're going to talk about OU812. And already a couple of comments in the chat are like, probably Van Halen's worst record with Sammy. Well, you know, there's some good stuff on here. We're going to listen to them all. And we had all of our patrons and special guests rank each song on here. So we're going to find out 10-1 what our official show rankings are for OU812.
Absolutely. So why not give a little roundabout intro to who we have joining us on the panel tonight?
Oh, I get to do that.
Yeah, you get to do it.
Oh, geez, I wasn't paying attention. I don't know, we got some assholes. No, we got. Okay, let's go from Mark Shot here. Let's move our way to left. We got Heath McCoy, Ryan Powell, Scott Monroe, Michael Griffith, the Chazitar, Chaz Charles, the legendary Eric Senich, Michael Triplett, Jeff Brewer has finally made his way onto a call here tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Good to see you, Jeff. The illustrious Kevin Brown and Scott Everett taking the top corner here on our Hollywood Squares of Van Halen fans. So that's the panel for tonight here.
Hell yeah. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you all doing this evening? And everyone shout your answers all at the same time.
Hey, we're doing great.
Hey, yeah.
Awesome.
I love it when they understood the assignment. That's great. Right. It's good stuff. I'm sure there's a few of you that are eagerly awaited or have been eagerly awaiting this particular live show. And there's probably a few of you out there that go, "Ugh, why did it have to be this one?" And we're going to find out who you are. And that's perfectly okay. This is a safe space. But yeah, as Corey said, already people are down and out on OU812, but I am not one of them. But I am very curious to see how my personal ranking list stacks up to the rest of you's, because I guarantee you my list at least will have you scratching some heads. But that's why we do this. That's why we try to explore where we're at in this musical journey. So where do we go from here, Corey?
Why don't we go around the horn and just get some general memories of OU812? Of course, this came out in 1988, so Kevin Brown would have been about 40 back then. So I'm sure he's got some fond memories of this one. Let's start with you, Kev. What was your intro to OU812?
Yeah, one of the first albums really I got into, because I got into Van Halen in the Sammy era. 5150 and OU812 were the first two albums that I really listened to. And being a little nerdy, zitty, keyboard-playing geek at school when I was that age, this album really appealed to me because there's plenty of keyboard on it, right? And it still held, like, I still like a lot of the songs, and I think it's a good record. I would say it might be the weakest of the Sam era, and I'd be okay saying that, but I don't think it's a bad record. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing what everyone else thinks.
Oh, we've already got a question here. What's Kevin drinking? Tom wants to know.
Water,
that's
the booze.
Right.
I'm off the booze for 2024, boys.
Right. So he's going to be a lot less entertaining.
It's fine. Corey and I will make it up for you.
That's right.
Kevin, I guess we're never going to go for that beer.
We still can. You can just drink beer and I'll drink water. It's easy.
All right.
It's all good.
He'll have a mocktail.
That's right.
Those are nice.
Here's little Kevin with his Roy Rogers enjoying the evening. Let's go down to Scott Everett. Scott, your introduction to OU812, sir.
Sophomore year in high school, I jumped on the Van Halen bandwagon with 84. And when the lead singer changed, I was on board both sides, Dave and Van Halen. So love 5150 and loved OU812 as well. So, some people, it may not be their thing. It may not be their Van Halen, but it's all my Van Halen. So I love to talk about it.
Excellent. In the chat, Mervin Fernandez says first Van Halen CD I owned. So there you go. Scott Haskin wants to know, Kevin, how is the snare, though? Because he's been listening to a lot of Ultimate Cadillac Clash, and all you do is bitch about Lars Ulrich's snare sound. So,
because it's shit most of the time.
I mean, he's not wrong.
And Nicholas Norway in the chat, OU812 had some of Ed's best solos, man. Kind of hard to argue that. Mr. Brewer, how about you, sir? What was your intro to OU812?
Well, I bought it the same day it came out, probably first, immediately when the place opened, I was there. I started listening to Van Halen back in 84, right at the beginning when Jump came out. Big fan of 84, huge. I missed that tour. I was only 16 at the time when it came out, but 0812, actually 5150 was the next one, right? That one I was happy with. I wanted it to be more like 84. It's just the way it is, but I loved it. I mean, it's some of my favorite songs are on 5150. 0812, I was a big fan of it when it came out. I was not as big a fan of the keyboard songs just because I was ready to go to see Monsters of Rock, and I was kind of a little off put a little bit when I was going there. Again, I think I mentioned it on the Discord, just going to see Metallica and the Scorpions, and then Van Halen, is their big hit at the time was When It's Love. And it just, I'm hearing Kill 'Em All and I'm hearing When It's Love. I had a little bit of an issue with that, but at the time I loved the album. I really did. It was later on when I started comparing it to other stuff and really thinking about it. And I thought, I'm not really into that. I know I had a keyboard. I played keyboard. I learned all those keyboard songs. So I didn't hate it at the time. Now when I'm hearing it later, especially like Feels So Good, I don't really like that organ sound of that thing. But in general, it's an okay album. It's still my favorite 1988 album. It's still Van Halen. Mm-hmm. So you guys can hear me, right? I can't hear myself.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're just sitting there blathering. We didn't hear a fucking word. Okay, Michael Griffith, let's go to you next. What is your intro to OU812?
Hey, first thing, I have my Who the Fuck is Eddie Van Halen
nice
T-shirt on.
So
happy birthday to him.
Oh, yeah.
From Van Halen so 3, this is from the 3 tour, which that's the worst album, not OU812. So clear that up. But yeah, I had an 8th grade that came out, and the girl next to me in class had OU812 really big on her binder. And I was a Van Halen fan, and I just didn't know the album already came out. And I asked her, what's OU812? And she said, oh, it's a new Van Halen album that I got. So I got that like right after school. And then so I could say the next day, hey, I have the album too. And then, you know, it was great. And ever since then, I've been a massive fan.
There you go. It's all about the ladies. I might have a Plentywood Montana come and go story to tell later on. But let's go now to the Chazitar. I hear he spent $7 million on this thing. Chaz, what is your recollections of OU812?
We are still debugging it as we go along, so it's costing a fortune by the day. But yes, this record, though, hell, and you see the avatar, will keep me young forever. So there will always be a Chaz presence. I was 18 when this came out, and it was a great record. I did not listen to the bottom three that I put on my list. Honestly, I would always skip over them. But the rest of the tracks on this album, I mean, Cabo Wabo, I wasn't around to vote for, but I think I did, you know, offline. But I mean, some of these songs are some of the best, I thought, of the Hagar era. And you got to think too, that by the sound, the maturity in the band on most of these tracks is kind of, you know, representative of the core of the band being together as long as they were, because this was their eighth record, right? So comparatively, given the shit I've been listening to with Roger Waters and his Redux, Dark Side of the Moon, by that point, that was Floyd's eighth album, Dark Side of the Moon was, when that came out. So, you know, the level of maturity in the musicianship and what they achieved, right? I think there were some moments on this record musically as a band that they just, like, this was like the peak of, I think, their creative musical, like the, just, you know, kind of a peak period, I think, for them and like musician, you know, wise. And so for me, it was great to go back through it and have to rank it. It was tough. After the bottom three, it was really tough, man. It was a slugfest. So I can't wait to hear everybody else's rankings. I'll shut up.
All right. Well, now now we go to Eric Senich. Eric, in 20 words or less, give us your feelings on OU812.
Absolutely love the album. Love it. My favorite Sammy era album. It's when I became a fan, and it's the first album where I was part of each single as it came out, video. Absolutely love this album. My favorite from the Hagar era.
And you're not alone. I know our good friend Sean McGinnity from the Sean Geek and Fast Fred podcast also said OU812 is his absolute favorite too. How about you, Michael Triplett? Is OU812 one of your favorites?
I hate to say it that way. I'm not trying to repeat what Eric said or anybody else, but send it to the email of Corey and Mark as I was ranking this. It's not going to be popular when you start looking at my bottom two, especially. I know I'm going to get some pushback on it, but this is a great album for me. I bought it on cassette. I had the cassette single of Black and Blue and the cassette version of this because that was the way I could play it in my car. These albums were built for the car stereo, wherever you were, and that's where I wanted to hear it.
Well, I can tell you right now, Michael, you're number 10. You're the only person to rank that song number 10.
And no, I know. I know that one for sure.
Oh, we are going to get into that one. How about you, Scott?
I have to blank my screen out.
I wonder, do I have the ability to kick you off the fucking call if you piss me off? We'll find out.
I love confrontation, so.
All right, Scott, what do you think?
No direct memories for me. I was 6 years old at the time when it came out, but it was one of those that when I did start to get into Van Halen in the mid to late 90s, I got the back catalog and didn't really spin it a whole lot, to be honest. It wasn't until your show that I really started to appreciate it. I would listen to When It's Love, AFU and Source of Infection and skip everything else pretty much. Since your podcast, I've come to appreciate it a lot more than I used to.
Excellent. See, Mark, we're doing the Lord's work. We're turning more people on to OU812. Ryan Powell, my good friend, how you doing here tonight? And what are your thoughts on OU812?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of similar to Scott in that my initial exposure to OU812 was piecemeal through the latter era. Actually, I managed through the Van Halen mailing list to get somebody to help me with a bootleg of the Van Halen Balance pay-per-view. And that was recording that on the radio. They had the interlude songs in the middle of the interview were Feel So Good, Mine Online, things like that. And that was my first exposure to it. It's just, I've never heard this before. I'm like, that sounds like it's Van Halen. And before I ever got to the back catalog, but I don't know where I'd rank it overall in Sammy era albums or anywhere else. But it's, like everything else, for me, it's all thumbs up, and I just appreciate them for what they are and find the good in them.
Excellent. Heath McCoy, you've been known to say some controversial things in your days here. Heath Murphy, what do you think? OU812, is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down for you?
Half and half. I think half of it's amazing and half of it's just terrible and hasn't held up. It came out when I was in grade 12. When the Van Halen split happened, like, they were my favorite band from grade 8 up. And when they broke up, I was in Camp Dave, but I liked them both, right? Like, I liked the Van Hagar stuff too. I kept buying everything from both sides. And that same year, Skyscraper came out, and that was the first time Dave did something that I don't like Skyscraper for the most part. And I was like, and I started to see, like, that he was on the way down, Van Hagar was like on the way up, and that was a tough one for me to swallow a little bit, because I liked the album, but there's a lot that I didn't like about it. I had this girlfriend at the time, and she was a Rick Astley fan. And she wanted to listen to When It's Love. Every time we were driving around, she wanted to listen to When It's Love, man. And I was like, she's a Rick Astley fan. And that's a little, it's a little metal snobby of me. But I'm like, something's wrong here when the Rick Astley fan wants to dig into that Van Halen song, you know? So that's my complicated history with OU812.
I got you. Now we come to Mark.
Held on to that one.
Mark Kamar, I doubt you were even born in 1988.
As a matter of fact, I was. I was born.
Yeah.
But we've gone through every track on the show now. You've only downvoted one song from OU812. Have you kind of grown to appreciate a little more as we've gone along here?
For sure. Even when we just the week prior to this, I guess so this past week, really I was diving back into it and sort of giving it my full analytical analysis so that I could rank it properly. And yeah, I got to say, in listening this past week to it and kind of reviving my thoughts from the initial listens on the show, at least, I really appreciate this album. It's still not my favorite Sammy era album of his by a long shot, as you well know, Corey, but it is still, it's damn good. Not every song is going to be a banger, and I will even give a lot of the songs many of you out there that really don't enjoy that are on this album, I personally do think are bangers, but they're not all of them. So we're going to get into that, and I can't wait. How about you, though? What are your fond memories of OU812?
Well, I tell you, I remember being a young lad in 1988. Gosh, I would have been 14 years old with my fake ID. In Plentywood, Montana, going to see the Peelers, and a certain young lady who was stripping that night at the Country Bar in Plentywood, Montana, when she found out it was my birthday. It was my 14th birthday, but she didn't know that. She thought it was my 21st, because back then you could really doctor a Saskatchewan driver's license really, really good, and add a little bit of peach fuzz on my chin, like, yeah, I'm 21, and they just didn't fucking care because I was going to buy booze there, right? That's all they cared about, and she did this wonderful little a handstand in my lap and spun her legs around my head. And I found Jesus that night, and I found When It's Love that night. So I'll always have fond memories of When It's Love and that young lady who got naked for my benefit in Plentywood, Montana.
Gosh, I'd love the song too.
Fond memories of the coal miner's daughter stripping down to her pelt while Corey drinks a illegal Pilsner and enjoys some OU812.
Exactly. It's American beer, so it's not even beer. Like it's fucking horse piss, right? So I had about 12 by that point and didn't feel anything because everyone else is pissed out of their mind. But I reached out to some guests as usual, and I just want to read a couple of recaps here from our good friends from the Bogus Oda Show.
Yeah.
Bo-host Darren and Bo-host Brent. Let's start with Bo-host Darren. His thoughts on OU812 are, quote, "It's not my favorite Van Halen album, but my most often played Van Halen album. It's dripping with nostalgic memories, probably not as good as mine, and I think it's the band's apex in terms of their overall visual appearance. Colorful fashions, tanned health, I almost said teeth, tanned health, white teeth, there we go, and the ultra good time brotherhood vibe. And as a guitar player, it's the most accessible to learn." So there you go, guitar players could probably chime in. It is probably, according to Darren anyway, maybe the easiest to kind of pick up an axe and learn how to play some Eddie Van Halen riffs. So
let's go. Very accessible record, yeah. Yes. I would agree. Yeah.
Bo-host Brent says, quote, "This sophomore Hagar era album holds up as the two in the 1-2 punch of late 80s Van Halen rock. The songwriting and licks, Mine All Mine and Feel So Good guitar solos rank way up there for me, were taken to a new level with the Collection 2 remasters. Always criticized for lack of bass, the bottom end is far more pronounced now. And we have a comment in the chat to that effect. Brandon Schuler, who says the OU812 remaster sounds incredible to my ear. Oh, now everybody else is commenting, so it jumped on me. To my ear, it's the most dramatic remaster of the Collection 2. And for everyone who has the Collection 2, as I do on vinyl, I would agree with that. Scott Haskin, he complained the other day that the side stick and When It's Love, it's really, really loud in the remaster now. And like, it's he was shocked. None of us called out during that episode, but just how loud that stick was. But it's really quite pronounced now. I'm going to go back to the comments here. OU812 is one of the albums ever. I'm going to assume best albums ever. Nicholas Dorway says guitar Sammy Belcher just uploaded a video today of him.
Sammy Belcher
getting haircuts on Instagram. There you go. Be Cool or Be Podcast Out says Mine All Mine at least has some good lyrics from Sammy. And Tom Robertson says, hey, they officially introduced the SA-126 guitar today at NAMM. That's available in May. So, yeah, I know our good buddy Josh couldn't be on the call tonight because he's at NAMM. I told him to make sure and get some pictures with the SA-126. So,
you better.
All right. So, Mark, I guess if there's nothing else, should we just get right into it here?
Let's get right into it, man. There's a lot to talk about.
All right. Let's start off with the song that finished number 10 in our rankings. And this is the biggest landslide of all. This is number 10 in almost every single ballot. I'm going to play a little bit for you here, too, and then we're going to talk about it. Oh, man, I thought I turned on a ZZ Top record here or something. No, this is Eddie and the Boys. This is AA Political Blues. Not even on the original vinyl or cassette, just on the CD. Telephone is ringing. Yeah, his telephone is ringing. It's Chairman Mao, motherfucker.
You said, Corey, it's not on the vinyl?
No. It wasn't on the original.
Okay, because I know it's not on the cassette.
Yeah.
I forgot about vinyl, whether it was on that or not.
I tell you, on our rankings, it finished with 29 points. The highest it finished on anybody's ballot was 8th. 3 people ranked this song 8th out of 10. Its lowest rankings, of course, was 12th. 18 folks ranked this one dead last. Just tell him anything. Not really shocked. Let's see. Yeah, no votes for first, no votes for second, no votes for third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Yeah, this one was by far the lowest ranked song on the record. Anybody surprised?
I'm surprised in myself for not remembering that, this is how this one goes. So full disclosure, that one vote for 9th place, that's mine. Because I forgot how much I did not like what's happening in this song, but I had forgotten to put it on my original ranking. So I told Corey, just put it at number 9 now. It's fine. It'll be all right. But
I also gave it 9th place.
Yep.
Oh, all right, right on.
Yeah. Mike Triplett, you ranked this one 8th, though. I think you're one of the few people that ranked it as high as 8.
Yeah, funny timing on the unmuting me. But this is it's not horrible. It's different. It grew on me over time. I remember with playing it on cassette, it's just like skip it all the way through and then get back to Mine All Mine from the first side. And so playing this track was get back to the rockers. But this one grows on you over time. And like I said, with 8th, those bottom, my number 10 and number 9 are just okay to me.
I think it just doesn't fit on this album, though. That's my main issue with it is it's just sonically, it's so far removed from everything else. Yeah. And what they were trying to do, Ed's gone a specific way with the songwriting on this album. It's just this weird extra cut that really should have just been a B-side. And it's a perfectly fine B-side on an album.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't it some kind of small schmaltzy thing they did with it anyway? It was like because there was a relationship with the guy from Little Feet or something, right? Like behind the scene.
Templeman and Landy produced it, so I'm wondering if it was like a tribute to them that they threw it on there.
Yeah.
I don't really think of it as a proper track. Like, I mean, we're rating it because it's on there and everything, but I don't think I think of it as just sort of like a, you know, like a throwaway kind of track. Like they just did it for a lark, you know? And I remember when I was on the show where we did A Political Blues, and And I gave it a thumbs up, actually. It was very barely a thumbs up, and I've regretted it ever since. I should have given it a thumbs up. But it was novelty.
Yeah. They said that the band took only 30 minutes to record the song. I've only spent about 30 minutes listening to it.
That sounds about right.
It's nice to have. It's like a document. Nice to have, you know, nice throwaway thing, but yeah.
Yeah, but
it's such a missed opportunity, though. I mean, you know, they could have really done something with it. You could have started off blues and then kind of given it that Van Halen flavor for the back half, you know, giving it a Eddie solo. I mean, otherwise, it's just blues in a bar and there's nothing special to it.
Well, and,
I consider it like when they did Happy Trails on Diver Down. Yeah, it's just like Down, that. Yeah. Just the lark, you know. And actually, though, I don't mind the sound of it. We talked about it on the show that time until the end. And Hagar just cannot do the blues. His blues thing is just not him. And that kind of blows it for me. And that's why I should have given it the thumbs down. But
for me, it's the key is it's blues in a bar.
Yep.
And they don't do anything special with it in terms of Van Halen, but it's Ed and Al jamming on a laid back blues. And the nuance there is very much to be appreciated. There's so much just small nuance, the way that they fit into a groove, the way they kind of hang back on it. There's a lot to appreciate in it. And yes, it's not typical Van Halen, but it's just great to hear them jam. Yes. And I think in and of it, just that by itself is worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
And I got to ask, Ryan, were you the other eight? One of the other eights?
No, I still ranked this at the bottom of my list. But everything's relative.
But I love your love for it.
Everything's relative. I appreciate all of them.
No, cool. Good
point.
Very cool.
It's a good point. Yes.
We had a good chat comment in the chat here. I wanted to point out, Don Landee just set up a mic in the middle of the room and they just played live in the studio. So it's just four on the floor, just jamming out the blues. And I'll never be mad at that. Good blues groove. Like you said, maybe Sammy, not the best. He's no Steven Tyler, no Billy Gibbons, but you know, there's really nothing wrong with it, but it did rank 10 on most ballots. Eric, you had it number 10 too. What are your thoughts on AA Political Blues?
Yeah, of all the Little Feet songs to pick, this wouldn't have been it for me. I mean, it's at the bottom. I would have loved to hear them do a different song from Little Feet, Two Trains, Let It Roll, or Rock and Roll Doctor. But for some reason, they picked this. I think it was more of, we were in that beginning of the CD era. So I think it was used as a way just to get people to maybe buy the CD to say, hey, there's an extra track on it. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's on there. That's why Kevin's right. It doesn't really fit with the rest of the album. So yeah, it's the only misstep for me in this album.
All right. Anybody else with any thoughts on AA Political Blues?
Nah, that one's left forgotten probably.
Shocked. Like there's such a huge jump from 10 to 9. Like 10 had, what do you say, 29 points. Our ninth place song has 82. Wow. So again, and we just went like 1 through 10. There's 10 tracks, right? So if we got a number 10 vote, it gets 1 point. If we got a 9, it gets 2 votes. And I just tabulated all that stuff. Oh, Sean Geek and Fast Fret, Bon Jovi's Love for Sale, anyone? Yeah, good call. That it does sound very, and again, that's another one that just let's just throw up a mic and play the fucking thing, right? Love for Sale. So there you go. Good call there, Mr. McGinnity. Absolutely. All right, you guys want to hear what number 9 was?
Sure.
All right, let's play a little bit of it here. Tell you what, it's got a good intro. That's right, we're talking about Sucker in a Three-Piece. Number 9 in our official show rankings. It got 82 points. Its highest ranking on ballots was as high as 4. So two people ranked it 4th. Its lowest ranking was 10th. One person ranked this the worst song on the record. Most people had it kind of in the 9th, 8th kind of area. But Sucker in a Three-Piece. Mark, you're one. I think you had this one pretty high. You had this one number 6 on your ballot. What do you think?
Was it 6 or 5? I think it was 5 for me, actually.
Was it 5? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Yes, it was my number. I had it in my at the bottom of my top 5 because I don't know, man. Something about this song for me, just it must be just the main riff and the hooks just really lured me in. And I found myself enjoying it a lot more this time around, coming up with rankings than before when we did the I mean, obviously, I've upvoted it when we did the actual show, but something about it just hit in the right way. And that's why I always say I'll rank this song this way because I'm feeling a certain way for now, but it's always subject to change. And Van Halen's really good about doing that with a lot of their songs, you know, even because even their worst song can you can still, much like in the vein of Ryan Powell, you can still find a lot of the good within it. So you can praise it because it's still Van Halen and they're still, you know, making artistry with their music the way they do. So yeah, for some reason, man, Sucker in a Three Piece really hit home for me on this one, and it just happened to make the top five. So yeah.
All right, Mr. Triplett, how about you?
Like I said, this is one of my favorite albums. Sucker in a Three Piece is just—it's not a novelty song; it's a fun song that just Sammy has a fun time with, and the band just follows along with it. So it's just fun to listen to. He's being sarcastic, and hey, I'm losing this. So I dig it. Now, it's a 7 for me, but there's just better songs ahead that rock just that much harder.
You got number 7, not bad. Heath McCoy, you ranked this one 10th. You said this is the worst song on OU812. Explain yourself, sir.
Yes, it's terrible. I think it's shit. It sounds like something that would have been, a filler track on VOA. It sounds like something that would have been next to Dick, right next to Dick in the Dirt. I think that the lyrics are completely, ham-fisted. They're not clever. They're not, and even the band, even Eddie and Al, it's not. I mean, it's okay.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Eddie and Al, any Eddie and Al is good, but it's not, it's just not inspired Eddie and Al. I think it's a weak track. I don't think it holds up at all.
I tell you what, our two people who ranked it fourth, Per Lineker and fan favorite Kelsey, ranked this one fourth.
Wow,
on this record.
Four, okay. Yeah.
Let's go to Scott Everett now. Scott, Sucker in a Three Piece, where did you have it here?
I had it right here at number 9. I think it's, the music's great. Just one of those songs where Sammy's overt obviousness with the lyrics and wishbone and the licking up at the end of the lyrics just is way too over the top. And I'm like, I think it kind of kills it. And there's just better songs on the album.
Fair enough. Kevin Brown, do you remember where you had this one?
Yeah, I think I had this at number 8. So I was right in that range as well. It's just a... I totally agree with Heath for once. Actually,
oh my God.
I think it sounds like it just sounds like any sort of rock from this era on the radio. I don't think it sounds very Van Halen-y. It's just a bit, there's nothing wrong with it. And I never turn it off or skip it. I just think it's a bit, yeah, okay. You know? Bit of a throwaway.
Eric Senich, talk some sense into these people, please. You had this ninth though. But imagine you're maybe a little more positive than they are.
Oh, Eric. Really?
But I'm with Mark on this, is that sometimes, you know, an okay song, is there still something in it to listen to? Usually that something in it is Eddie, and that's what this is. It's an okay song, if not for Eddie's guitar work, which is blistering.
Yes.
There's my word. Yeah, I love the opening that lead into Al's drums. Just not good enough to put past the songs above it.
Fair enough. Ryan Powell, how about you?
Yeah, I think that's my take on it. I think I have this ninth as well. Not to say I don't like it. I think there's a lot to enjoy about it. I love the breakdown section. Just when it's just Eddie kind of setting the rhythm. I just love it when everybody else lays out and he's just like, okay, here it is. So I think there's a lot of good, just doesn't stack up as well with everything else on the album.
Scott Monroe, you had this one eighth. So one spot up from where it is currently ranked.
Yeah, you know, for me, this kind of started that middle section where things started kind of being a toss-up and I had to split hairs. I guess for me, I ranked it in that spot just because it seems a bit aimless to me. It's not as tight as the other songs that I like above it. You know, very cool tone, cool solo. I'm not a big fan of Sammy's lunch pail lyrics. The harmonies in the chorus are probably the standout for me. But it just, you know, it's not tight enough. And then after the solo, it just kind of keeps going and I want it to end. So it could have benefited, I think, from a tighter edit.
All right, Michael Griffin, you also had this one eighth. Your thoughts on Sucker in a Three Piece?
I did. For me, there's like this trilogy of the hardest songs on the record, you know, Source of Infection, this one, and AFU. So, you know, I kind of struggled with, I put this one in the middle of those three, number eight. I love Al's drums on it. I get where Sam's going. At least he's kind of telling a story and kind of conveys that. But it's not the greatest lyrics. And it should have ended a little quicker than it did. But it's okay. I mean, I don't skip it when it comes on mainly because of Al.
All right, Chaz Attar, what are your thoughts on Sucker in a Three Piece? You had this one pretty high, actually, 10, 9, 8, 7. Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm with Michael there, you know. It's and for me, again, this record, there was more about it, just where they were, where I was. It was the summer of my, you know, I was 18. It was a great fucking record. And really, to me, the musical sound on this and just like the band, as somebody said before, right, this is when they were all bros and everything was great and like the kind of apex of where they were as a unit. And it came across and it was just so like... this tune, the music for me was got past the lyrics. The lyrics were funny. It's what I expect from Van Halen. So, you know, not a big shock there. I mean, you know, hey, after all, right? But, you know, the music really spoke to me. I love the groove. I love playing this one. I love plucking it out on an acoustic guitar. Got some memories of doing that on the beach by the campfire, a couple of the songs off of this record. So, yeah, for me, just this is one of those tracks that just makes for great summer night music. Yep.
Perfect. All right, let's go to the YouTube chat here. Be Cool or Be Podcast out. The music rocks, but Sammy's lyrics, man. Oh, boy. Yep. We're talking lunch pails. Yeah, that's not good. Nicholas Doorway. The live version of this is amazing, especially the solo. And a guitar up to her lunch pail. Yep, absolutely. If you're looking for like a guitar song on this record, this is not a bad one. Actually, I ranked this one kind of high. Mine was number six on my rankings for Sucker in a Three. Actually, number... 1, 2, 3. I had this number 5, actually.
Yeah.
So I was really high on Sucker in a Three Piece. So,
woo-hoo.
I don't mind. I'll die on that island. Let's now talk about what the song that hit number 8. And this is one I'm shocked was this high. I got to be honest with you. I'm not a fan. I downvoted this the first time we did this song back on the show. But this is one of their singles. Oh, for all my keyboard lovers out there. Kevin's getting turgid. I could tell right now. Look at him. Yep. See, don't throw up the devil horns to Feel So Good, motherfucker. Feel So Good, number 8. Total points, 93. Some crazy bastard had this ranked number 1. Someone said this is the best song on the record. Somebody also said this is the worst song on the record.
Scott's got a big smile on his face over there.
So Feel So Good comes in at number 8. I'm going to look up who ranked it number 1 here. Nate,
you know,
from the Deep Purple podcast ranked this number 1.
Wow.
Good man.
Thank you so much, Nate, for submitting your...
It's the keyboards. Yeah.
Nate loves the keyboard. He's a Deep Purple fan, obviously. He, you know, he loves this kind of stuff.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm shocked it was as low as it was, actually, on Kevin Brown's rankings. You had it, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
I did 5th, yeah. I mean, there's just, I think there are some better songs on this album, but for me, like, again, as a young keyboard player, I still can't fucking play this song. It's really weird. It's a really, really weird part. And it's that thing that you know, we all love Ed as a shredder on guitar, and we love him as a rhythm guitarist. I love him as a keyboard player too.
Sure.
And this is so inventive, this song. I've always liked this song. And when I went through my rankings, I'm like, oh, well, do I be cool and go for the stuff that... Because I know what I think sort of objects with the better songs are, but I'm going what my favorite songs are, and I've been listening to this album since it came out. So, yeah, I like this song, man.
That's what
you were... I might have liked it more if it had a different keyboard sound. This sound is not... I didn't like it when it came out, and it hasn't aged well either. It just sounds really dated.
Yeah, I dig it.
I agree with the keyboard sound. That it's dated, and it's and you know, comparing it to the Deep Purple keyboard sound, like I think John Lord wouldn't touch this pithy thing. Like it's just this is the guy who did Smoke on the Water keyboards, man. Like yeah, I can't see it.
Oh yeah, I had it at 9. Yeah, yeah, this was at 9 for me.
It was my number 9 too, largely for the chorus. I think I don't mind the keyboard tone so much, but it's. Where's my Lars Ulrich stock soundbite here? Because that fits.
I think it's fucking stock. What? Which part of that is unclear to you?
You know what I mean? Just a little stock.
It's almost write carnival it down? For me. It almost has that carnival sound, the whole repetitive aspect of it. It just...
Yeah, exactly.
It was number 9 for me, too. Just... If it wasn't for the guitar with the way that the guitar starts to sound right off the carnival sound, I'm like, that would have been a 10 for me, but it's a 9.
Okay. Eric Senich, for you, it was a 4.
Yeah, I'm fascinated when I hear stuff like this, like what it is we're hearing and why some people just hate it and some people love it. But I always knew Kevin Brown was brilliant. I always knew that. So from and Nate, too.
Oh, my God.
I love Feel So Good. I love this fucking song. Most underrated ballad of the Sammy era. And the band was divided on it, by the way. Sammy loved it. Eddie liked it. But then Sammy said the other guys in the band didn't, so I'm assuming that would be Alex and Michael, although I can't imagine Michael saying he doesn't like anything.
Exactly.
I can imagine Mike just being quiet. But
it is Al. Yeah,
but I have not grown tired of this. I love this song.
This is really...
And if I could hug Kevin Brown right now, I would.
Lame.
Wow.
Weak.
I'm going to send a message in a bottle to Kevin.
It's a quid pro quo there.
You guys can all leave if you want to. You can just all leave if you want to go.
Did you take all the soul and the life out of the track?
Chaz is going to create an avatar of Eric and Kevin hugging next time.
Do not put that fucking idea in his head, you maniac.
Kevin being the drum guy. How about I love Alex's drums?
Yeah, I mean, everything about it, it's got a... Like I said, I like the groove, I like the feel of it, I like the... It's...
Don't worry about these guys. Don't worry about these guys. Let's... You and I continue this show. Corey, take care. We'll take it from here.
We'll take it from here.
We have one more person who wanted to get a thought in.
It's the worst piece of shit we've ever done, and it's not
even... Wow, that seems a little harsh.
You have to admit, it's better than Lick My Love Pump from
Nothing. Nothing is better than Lick My Love Pump. Because it's in D minor, the saddest of all keys.
I like this song. I like the harmonies is what draws me into it. It reminds me of Feel Your Love Tonight. The harmonies in this does. And I do, I mean, it's cliche, but I feel good when I put this song on. Like I feel good when Feel Your Love Tonight's on. So if you're in a bad mood, put this one of the two on. Although some of you, I think this will make you in a worse mood if you hear it by what you're saying. But
well, let's go to the chat here. Marvin Fernandez had it at 7. Tom Armbruster also had it at 7. The Be Cooler Be podcast out says this may have been the most disappointing song for him on the album, but the solo does save the song for him somewhat. Nicholas Norway says Michael Anthony said that they did a heavier version, a more rockin' version of the song, and he still has a copy of it put away. That would be very interesting to hear.
That would be cool.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about like a demo or?
Not sure. Nicholas, if you're out there, our Van Halen expert would like to know.
Oh,
more.
Sure. Everyone else is being talked about. So, Mikey's got to jump in the news.
That's Mikey's MO, right? He's going to come out with videos now and just trash
that's
everybody.
That's it. Behind the scene footage. Never before.
David Lee Roth blows goats. I have proof.
I don't think Mikey liked this song, or at least this version of it, because I don't think he's playing on it. It's just, I mean, the bass is just the low end of the keys.
Yeah,
good point.
Pretty much
good
all of point. It. Which I don't mind. I think this is I ranked it, I think, 6, and it's a good song. It has I enjoy it a lot more, and I was actually torn. It might have been a little bit higher, but I kind of just, you know, had to split the hairs. but I love the keyboard, the keys before the solo, the breakdown leading into the solo. I think when you think about it, outside of right now, this is probably the most complex, like rhythmically, keyboard work that Ed does in their history.
Yeah.
There's a lot of syncopated stuff to what Kevin was saying. It's more complex than most things that he puts out. And so I think there's a lot of interesting things going on.
Kevin's insane. Don't listen to him.
In terms of that, what you were saying about the keyboard, yeah, the syncopated keyboards and stuff. Does anybody else hear like kind of really poppy era Genesis in this?
That's because wow.
Phil Collins chipping away.
Sammy said it. He told Martin Popoff when he was interviewed by Martin. He said it's us trying to do a Genesis thing. That was exactly what they were looking for.
Phil Collins pop era Genesis. And
good call, man.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that's an awesome thing, but yeah.
No. Kevin Brown, is there a podcast out there that people can go to hear about Phil Collins era Genesis?
Yeah, man, there must be something kicking around. Hey, yeah.
We did one, season one of the Ultimate Catalog Clash, but I tell you, Eddie does play keyboards a lot different than Tony Banks does. He has nicer sweaters, too.
Jeez.
Mark Kamar, I'm going to give you the last word on Feel So Good. Actually, before I do that, the Bogus Otis Boys actually had Feel So Good ranked number 3. So they thought this was the third best song on the record, and they sent in this sound clip.
Life is a permanent limp dick with an occasional blowjob.
There you go.
Easy.
I guess this is the occasional blowjob.
Talk about a wordsmith.
Wow. Actually, on the call, I'm going to join. I had it number 3 as well.
Oh, just good.
The song completely still makes me happy. And the video is so, it's fun. It is carnivalish as they're spinning round and round and all that stuff. But Eddie looks so damn cool in this video and can't help it. The song makes me happy. Still to this day, makes me happy.
You look cool in every video except
Joe. Eric looks so happy hearing you. Just he was, look at the smile on his face.
That was almost the Dave face.
we're not talking Dave tonight. We want to be positive.
No Dave.
Yeah.
No Dave.
I can bring up some of this.
I'm thinking of Kiss Flaming Youth, right? A little carnival.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. All right. Nicholas got back to us in the chat. He says, I don't know, but I'm guessing it's finished but not mastered. So it could be a demo. It could be, not anything that they actually put the finishing touches on.
Hmm. And they didn't. I don't think they ever played it live.
Feels so good.
I don't think so.
Oh, wow. It was a single, wasn't it? It was a single, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a single.
They made a video. They made the video for it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And no live.
Cool video. Real cool video. Yeah, I don't think they played it live.
You're right. They didn't.
Nope.
It had been hard to replicate live.
Well, there goes that game.
Yeah.
Plus, they were doing the Monster.
Won that one.
They were doing the Monsters of the Rock tour when they did OU812. This would not, how can you put this next to Metallica, Doc and the Scorpions?
Well, they did a OU812 tour after Monsters of Rock. They didn't play that tour either. Yep.
Yep.
Well, yep.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah. Because it was a single. You would think they would play a single.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? They did play the next one live, the song that finished number 7 in our official rankings. They played it 3 times, according to setlist.fm. Any guesses? Shout them out real quick. Anybody? Any
three
guesses?
Times?
3 times.
And this is ranked 7?
7th, yep.
Oh, boy.
I go with Source of Infection.
Source of Infection.
Source of Infection? Really? That's who you guys are going with?
What I'm going with. Mine on mine better than play the live.
I'm saying
No, it's Black Source of Infection, baby. Number 7.
Oh, Source. Oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah, played 3 times. Let's bring up the slide. Total points, 117. That is very high for number 7. Big variance on this one, too. Somebody did rank this as their favorite song on the record. The lowest it ever ranked on anyone's ballot was 9th. So it was never last, but it was 9th on somebody's ballot. Taking a look, it finished 7th 5 times. 4th twice, 3rd twice. So Source of Infection, big variance on this one, too. I'm curious, guys, what do you think of Source of Infection? Let's start with Eric Senichu.
Yeah, I love this. By the way, is that you're playing this off of the collection too?
I am, yep.
Yeah, you can tell. Yeah. You can hear Mikey's bass a little bit more on this
100%,
one.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love this song. And Don Landy was just telling Greg Renoff in the interview that Greg did with him that it was one take, which you can tell. It's very raw. It's like, yeah, just roll tape, let's go. And Sammy's not happy with the lyrics, looking back, politically incorrect lyrics, but it's just he and Ed just messing around, man. And that's what I love about it. It's raw energy. Old school Eddie just ripping on guitar.
Yeah.
I mean, I never get sick. And Sammy's high note going into that solo. Speechless. Yeah. I had it at number 6.
I had it at number 7. I really dig Source of Infection. How great was that interview with Don Landy, dude, that Greg went up to? Fantastic.
Just to get Don Landy is, I mean, props to Greg, man.
And by the way,
Greg Landy trusted Greg enough to say, okay, we'll do it, because Landy doesn't do interviews.
That's right. Greg Renoff does submit rankings, though. His number one song is Source of Infection. So he's the one who ranked it first.
Well, you know what? Because
record.
He says it in the article. He says he loves the song. That's why he asked Landy about it.
Yeah, incredible. Scott Everett, your thoughts on Source of Infection?
I love the music. I think it's one of those songs that Sammy's probably hanging on for dear life, trying to find something lyrically that'll match with what Eddie and Alex are doing. So, you know, the lyrics are what they are, but I don't know what you can do with it being so busy with what they're doing right now.
Chazalytics, what do you think, buddy?
Oh, man. Like, you know, like the last show where we were talking about, I had a, you know, discomfort with a Sammy high note at a certain point. In the song here is where someone just said the high note he hits on this one, the screaming guitar. I mean, this one for me, this is like that classic mix of Van Halen swing with rock and just the groove and the speed, the precision with which these guys are playing. And like someone said, Sammy trying to do anything over that. So what he pulled off on this, I thought was just genius, the way the whole thing came together. I think I ranked this like 5 or
you had this number 5.
I ranked it 5. It was higher.
Yeah. Michael Griffin, though, you had this one number 9. What do you have against Source of Infection, and why are you wrong?
I think it's a lot like Pleasure Dome that we just did, in the sense that the band is great, but Sammy is just not keeping up. It bothers me every time I listen to it because he's not keeping up. And again, you guys are right. How can you? The music's like so fast, and maybe no one could, but... and then I don't like the lyrics. The title is lame, and you know, I think if there's like this, I think there's this trilogy of the hard songs, AFU and Sucker and this, and I think the other two are better if you're comparing those three. And it's better than AA Political Blues. Right. I would say that.
real quick, Corey. Does anybody pick up on, was it intentional? It's hey Eddie. You know, Sammy's talking to Eddie. That's like a Stevie Vai, Yankee Rose.
I bet.
And you have All You Went To, Eat 'Em and Smile.
Oh no, they got that from a Cheech and Chong movie. Remember?
I know.
Yeah.
Oh right.
There was always that thought. Yeah.
They were going back and forth at each other with the titles of the albums. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. Good point.
Kevin Brown, you had this one number 7.
Yeah, it's a good album track. It's not something, again, it's not something I skip or anything, and I agree with everyone else. Like, what do you do with this as a lyricist? You know? I mean, I think it's, weirdly, I think that I would prefer David Lee Roth to write lyrics to this one, because it's more, it feels like a bit more of a proto that era Van Halen than Hagar, which is maybe where the collision comes. I don't know. It's fine. I just don't love it as much as some of the tracks on the album. I don't really have a strong position either way, Corey, on this one, unusually.
All right. How about you, Mr. Monroe? Scott, that's you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the fast tempo. You know, for me, it harkens back to like Loss of Control from Women and Children. It's just that like crazy man tempo. Like everyone has said, that the high register that Sammy delivers on the chorus, that's really the highlight for me. And it's one of those you just have to look past the lyrics, I think. And enjoy the music. So I had it at number 5, I think.
Yep, number 5. Ryan Powell, you had this one, I believe, also at number 5.
Yeah, I think of the trilogy of the harder songs, as it was put, I think this one edged out the other ones for me. The tempo, I just love when they're kind of bleeding edge, and I think back, I was going to try and look it up, but I think back when I did sort of the sampling of all the fastest songs and which one was the fastest and kind of averaging out the tempos over the song, I think this one came in at number two and just barely underneath Loss of Control, just like up in that like 200 beats per minute kind of area. Wow. And I just love it when Ed and Al are just like scorching like that. And I think that edged it out for me against the other heavier guitar songs on this album.
Very good. How about you, Heath?
I really like this song. I've always loved it. I love the energy of it. Eddie and Al are like blistering on it. Stupid Sam lyrics, but it doesn't wreck it for me because he's just screaming his balls off. You know, that one, you know, the way he takes how high he takes that one line. The chorus. It really works for me. I've loved the song. Eddie and Al, they're like, I've heard scorching and blistering going around. That's what they're doing there.
All right, Michael Triplett, you had this five as well. What do you think?
Yeah, number five. It's like a freight train. I mean, it's just bolting forward. You blast it. You can't do anything more than blast it. And then the remastered versions in Collection 2 just make it even better for me. Sammy sounds great. Nonsense lyrics, but if you can just make those lyrics wallpaper and just it's there, but you don't pay that much attention to it, just uses vocals as a musical instrument, and it goes with the bass, the drums, and the guitar. It's blistering. That's it.
Very good. All right, Mark Meyer.
Made me giggle inside.
Oh, it made you giggle. That's good to know. What do you? Yeah, I know you ranked this one pretty high. You put this actually third.
I must have been in a really good mood and have been listening to this album focusing strictly on riffage, because like Source of Infection just cooks all the way through, man. And I echo what Michael said and what Heath said about it. And it's just, yeah, it just really kind of did it for me this week as I was taking all the songs in to find a spot for them. And I couldn't put it any lower than my top five, and of the and I struggled with, I knew what my top two were going to be. I struggled for the third, fourth, and fifth position, and somehow Source of Infection just seemed to just reach for the top, man, for whatever reason it was. Again, I guess I was just in a mood to listen to some riffage, and Source of Infection is riffage abound. So yeah, that's why it's my number three.
Don't agree. Lame. Forget it.
You're lame.
No, I had ranked number seven. I agree. I really like Source of Infection. We're going to go back to the chat here. Marvin Fernandez had it number eight, so he was pretty close. Our good buddy Tom says, the intro is my ringtone. I have it fifth, so he had it nice and up there. Nice. The Be Cool or Be Podcast Out. The intro is awesome, kind of like the little brother Hot for Teacher. That's kind of cool, yeah. Marvin Fernandez says, I like the music, but not the lyrics. Fair enough. Source of Infection is wild and erratic. I love it for that. And then Ryan, who's also on the call, also commenting on the YouTube page, 270 beats per minute, tied with Chinatown for third fastest. And yeah, if you remember, Chinatown's a pretty quick one too. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, Ryan. All right. Should we go to what finished at number six?
Yes.
Played 107 times. Anybody want to shout out a guess?
I bet it's AFU.
We have one vote for AFU.
Black and Blue, maybe.
Black and Blue, maybe.
I was going to guess Black and Blue, but between those two.
Yeah, Black and Blue, I'll go with.
Oh, somebody guessed AFU, wow. Though.
Come on.
Come on, he says. AFU Naturally Wired comes in at number six, 127 points. Somebody had this ranked as the best song on the album on their ballot. Somebody had it as the worst song on the album on their ballot.
What?
I know, right? Crazy. AFU Naturally Wired comes in at number six. And I tell you, the difference between six and two is not a lot. So really kind of surprised how this one shook out. AFU, I had this one 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I was one off on AFU. Put this off. Come on, that is so good. Let's go with Michael Triplett first on this one here. AFU, where did you have that one, my friend? You had that one fourth.
Number four. Yeah. Number four. Four through one. It wasn't like it was tough. Actually, for me, it was six through one. It was just no-brainers, but at the same time, this is just a great track. It just, everything sounds great about it. The lyrics are improved upon Source of Infection, and it just doesn't stop, and he just hits it. There's nothing wrong with this song, and this is four. So there's three better songs than this one, so I don't know what else to say. It's a good track, great track.
All right, Mark Kamara, you had this one seventh. What do you think of All Fired Up?
I think it's a fine song. This was another one where I kind of struggled where to put it, and it just sort of found its way to number seven, but that is not indicative of how I feel about it. Like, I know that's kind of towards the back end of the album, but it's perfectly fine. I like it a lot. I just liked six songs a little bit better.
All right. Heath McCoy, Thief of Joy, All Fired Up. Yeah, this one fourth. You must like this one.
I love it. I'm a drummer. I've always loved it. It's one of my favorite Alex Van Halen beats, that beginning beat. So great. That sort of offbeat he does. I love playing it. It's so fun. And actually, Sam, I'm always hard on Sam's lyrics. He's got his 90 Days on the Road is what I need when my axe cuts me deep. I let it bleed down the strings. All
oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
a great line, man. Yeah. That is great. That's one of my favorite Sam lyrics. That is a great rock and roll lyric. And I love the energy of the song. Yeah, I had it number four. It's a great, great song.
All right, I got to say, Jeff Brewer is back in the chat. He had to hop off the call. He says, third dumbest lyrics in the catalog. Are you talking about this one, Jeff? Because you ranked this number one. Jeff Brewer said this was the best song in the catalog, but the third dumbest lyrics in the entire catalog. Holy cow.
Here comes the best part.
Oh, I'll bring it up.
Good call.
There we go. Great example of something that they couldn't have done. In the high register, like in unison with Ed, that kind of back and forth.
By the way, the person who had this ranked last, Nate from the Deep Purple podcast, said this was the worst track off of Volume 2. My goodness. Chaztastic, what do you think? You had this one ranked third, buddy.
Yeah, man, this one, I mean, the energy, the guitar that's blistering, again, another high note. This was a highlight. Like I said, everything from my bottom three up, it was a slugfest. Where the hell does it go? It's all relative, but the energy, you know, the pure excitement of this song, this is a spot of lightning, man, you know what I mean? This is Van Halen unleashed. Honestly.
Amen, brother.
Best
testify.
That's that era.
I'm having a hard time taking Chaz seriously with this avatar.
It still looks better than the fucking Kiss avatars. I got
Harry Potter avatar.
It's used to me now. Here we are.
Michael Welcome Griffith, you had this future, ranked seventh. Boys.
His head's
Welcome
like this.
Your future, boys. This is it.
Oh, shit.
His head. No.
Don't the runoff of the Adderall.
Season 110 of Seaside Potter and the Avatar.
I can't wait till they coordinate it so you can get the hands going at the same time. That'll be great.
Michael, Chaz's head back just on keeps. Track. Just you have to say.
I'm dancing like so Schroeder. Sad. That's it. I'm just dancing like Schroeder.
Stroking out over there.
Jesus. I'm trying to get this train back on the tracks. Michael Griffith, take it away, friend.
This is the one I almost hit the send button to you, Corey, to raise up a little bit. I had it at seven. And I listened to it actually on vinyl before this. It's better than seventh. I kind of regret having it that low. It's a good gym song too. Like, you know, when you need to get fired up, right?
Yep.
So it's great. It's hard to, that middle section's difficult, but it's really good. The lyrics, like you said, Heath, they are pretty good. I think that is a good Sam lyric that he said. And man, it's just killer. The music's killer.
Scott Monroe, you had the seventh as well. What do you think?
Yeah, this was where I started not having any complaints really about any songs from rank seven on up. Echo everything everyone said, that the high register note that Sammy hits is the definite highlight. It has a very 5150 kind of energy to me. It feels kind of more spiritually connected to that album than to OU812. I love the energy. And I too kind of regret ranking it a little low. It probably deserves to be six instead of seven. But
all right, and Ryan Powell, you had it eighth, so you ranked it even lower than our official ranking, sir. What do you think?
Yeah, and again, no complaints with it. It's a great song. I like all the things that everybody else is pointing out. I think for me, it falls a little short where I feel like Ed's tone is a bit of a disconnect with the riffs that he's doing. I feel like the kind of wet tone that he has with most of this album kind of doesn't do this song as much service. And it just a slight disconnect there. But again, these were all like hairbreadth away from, you know, being a five rankings up. This middle of the pack stuff was really hard to rank, and just kind of gave the nod to the other ones.
Fair enough. Eric Sinich, you agreed with me. You had this number five.
One of Alex's best. And the remasters, his cymbals sounds even better. It's so crystal clear now. It's one of his best. And I mentioned Sammy's lead into the solo on Source of Infection, the Ready, Set, Go one. Well, this one tops it. Yeah. We just heard it. You know, when he hits that high note. Yeah, this is number five for me. And Ed, he's proving he still has the fire, because a lot of people are like, yeah, he's mellowing out with Sammy. But on this one, no.
No way.
Kevin Brown.
But then if you keep folding it, it keeps breaking. Why would you keep folding? And then everything has to be folded.
Everything has to be folded, but you had it folded.
Little sandwiches.
Stonehenge.
Bread.
No, we're not fucking doing Stonehenge.
Nobody knew where they came from.
Nobody knew
what they were doing.
It was trod upon.
Yeah, I think this was the first song that really jumped off this record for me when I first listened to it. It's still one of my favorite Van Halen intros. Like that thunderclap thing that Eddie does on guitar, which I don't know how a guitarist does, like that weird. It's so fucking cool, man. And then I actually think I'll disagree with a little bit with Ryan, surprisingly maybe, but this is one where I think the production on this album really works for this song, because I think if you heavied the drums up on this, I think it would then get a bit muddy. So I quite like it that it's got that. It's that weird tone to it. So, yeah, I'd love this song. And, yeah, Sammy's vocals. Holy shit, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sort of established him as one of the elite guys, right? So, yeah. I'd
power.
Number four for me. That, yeah.
That howl he does anybody, like, does it remind you of Robert Plant in Immigrant Song? That's kind of what I think of.
Yeah.
That howl he does, you know?
Yep. Absolutely.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. It's just clever.
Scott Everett, what do you think, my friend?
Everyone started this call saying how weak OU812 is, and this one I rank seventh, so, and I love this song, so it's just this one didn't have the emotional connection I have with the other songs of the album, so absolutely nothing wrong with it. The band's cooking, Sammy's vocals are great, just you know, emotionally didn't connect with me like some of the other songs did.
All right, folks, we're gonna wrap it up for this week. Those are tracks 10 through 6 on our Ultimate and the Podcast Will Rock OU812 rankings. Join us next week when we get to the top five songs from this album. But until then, on behalf of our esteemed panel and the one and only Mark Kammerer, my name is Corey Marcet. And as always, we are And the Podcast Will Rock, and we will rock you later.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.